Donald in a Kitchen talks about food. Donald in a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in a Kitchen, a radio show that explores what's cooking in central Iowa. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We get together once a week, Tuesday at noon, on this fine radio station. And we're glad that you can join us. Today we'll talk about apple butter, the Prairie Festival in Salina, Kansas, and Alice McGarry will join us to talk about Mustard Seed Farm. This was a busy, busy weekend.
A beautiful weekend. Whoa, yes. The weather was unbelievable.
Donna took a road trip. I stayed in Ames. And in Ames, there was so much to do, I couldn't do it all. The Maximum Ames Festival, music festival, was all over town. There was wonderful things going on. The Octagon
Art. We got lots of high culture here.
Oh, it was wonderful. The Octagon Art Festival, couldn't have had a better day for it. That was wonderful. I hear there was a football game, too. And I must say some good things about the Central Iowa Barn Dance Saturday night. The Barn Owl Band was really cooking, as they say. We had a wonderful time. So there was music, there was dancing, there was art, and there was football.
That's Ames.
Meanwhile, Donna took a road trip to the Prairie Festival. Tell us what you did this weekend,
okay,
Donna.
Okay, well, the Prairie Festival is at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas. This is an ongoing adventure. I've been doing this for, close to 15 years, and I go and cook a big meal there. And the reason I do this is to support the work of Wes Jackson, who's a geneticist who has had a vision of the future needs of the planet, no less. He left academia, 25, 30 years ago, and kind of went off to do this venture that he felt academia wasn't going to support because it was so far into the future. He always says, if whatever you're dreaming about and working on can be accomplished in your lifetime, you are not thinking big enough. So Wes, who's also a very good friend of Fred Kirschman, whom we will talk about later, founded the Land Institute, and the idea behind it is prairie systems, of which we are all quite aware of, are mostly perennial polyculture. It means that the seeds drop or else they come up again, but it keeps going on. You don't have to plow. You don't have to seed. It's perennial. It comes back every year. Also, polyculture means many, many different plants grow together, like on a prairie. And this is the natural systems that are inherent in nature.
Right. Don't think of the prairie just as grass. If you get out there and kind of scuffle around, realize that there's a lot of things called forbs underneath, the broader leafed things, and the variety can be amazing.
Yeah, and it feeds a lot of critters that we, as we lose the prairie, we lose a lot of bird life, a lot of diminished species variety and things like that. And more importantly, the prairie holds the soil in place. Those long, deep roots that go deeper and deeper every year, grow more soil. They keep that valuable Iowa prairie soil in place, and we don't lose it to erosion. So now, in modern agribusiness, we are growing mostly the opposite of polyculture perennials. We are growing monocultures. That's one culture, corn or soy. And it's annual. It means we got to plant, plow every year, which is every time we have the bare soil is when we lose, the precious nutrients that are here that Iowa is so prized for, that we have some of the best soil on the planet. So what Wes had set out to do as a good prairie farm boy was to grow perennial polycultures and turn them into food products. So he's breeding, for example, the first one that he's worked out is an intermediate wheatgrass. He's bred it into a grain-bearing perennial. So basically the idea is once you plant what they're now calling Kernza, K-E-R-N-Z-A is a name they made up for this new grain product. Once you plant it, it should be able to grow and grow and grow, and you don't have to replant it every year. And they're also at the Land Institute because they're geneticists, and they don't use they use traditional breeding techniques. They are not using, you know, genetic modification in the cross-species sense, okay? So they're not playing God here. They're really working with...
They're just playing far-reaching and well thought
right.
out science.
And most of our food crops have been this way, as farmers over millennia always picked the best and most productive plants to save for seed for next year so they'd have the best harvest. So anyway, they have produced... this kernza grain, and I brought some bread made with kernza that we're going to eat here with our apple butter. So the Prairie Festival, once a year, the Land Institute has a gathering where people who come and see, it's in Salina, it's held in a barn, it's out on the prairie, it's, you know, the weather there was beautiful like the weather here was, and about 800 people turn up to listen to music and speakers that talk about environmental issues. This year there was an awful lot about global climate change, very important, and he usually has wonderful, wonderful speakers. Some of them are very funny, but we're also interested in, you know, how we can keep our civilization from falling apart here. So I cook a meal for 600 or 700 people in
Odana. Repeat that.
600 or 700 people, and we eat it out in the prairie. So we and I've been doing this for a number of years. So this Salina has a group they call the Resilience Committee. I just love it. It's a bunch of ladies, mostly, not entirely. But what we do is at the beginning of the growing season, you know, March and April, her name is Paula. Paula finds, you know, they have farmers that grow out the amount of squash that we need for the. So we try to use all local ingredients. So the menu is kind of set every year. It's a big bison stew with local beans and butternut squash and brown butter sage. And so it's served out of these, you know, it's a cauldron. I don't know how they must be three or 4 feet wide, and there's four of them, you know, hanging on the tripods over the fire on the prairie next to the barn. All the meetings and dancing and everything is held in the barn on the prairie.
Do the cooks and the servers have to wear long dresses with mini petticoats underneath?
No,
oh,
but I do wear my grandmotherly apron every year.
Very good.
Always my, you know, I don't wear my white chef's coat. I wear my grandmotherly, not just the tie around the waist, but the full bib apron because it can be very messy. So we cook the day before, we cook all of this in the old Masonic Lodge. And I'm telling you, Salina has a gigantic stone Masonic Lodge, 3 stories high. The kitchen is cavernous, a bit antiquated, of course. But, you know, we get a team of people in there and we peel squash. And so we make this stew the day before and then cool it off and then reheat it the next day and then serve it from the cauldron. So we have the bread is made in Lawrence at a really good bakery, and it's 50% kernza. Now, kernza is their grain, and it's about 20% protein, which is extraordinary for a grain. And it doesn't have a lot of gluten in it, so it's hard to make a risen bread with it. It's great for flatbreads and things like that. So they use 50%, you know, Kansas is a wheat state, so they use 50% of organic wheat and 50% kernza. And the bread, 1 year we had it made locally, and the guy, it came out like hockey pucks. We all ate it, but now we use it's a regional bakery, we'll call it. It's not exactly local. So we have the bread, we have the stew, and then we have a salad that we make out of whatever has made it that year, usually rutabaga. It's all roasted vegetables, so it's rutabaga, sweet potatoes, red peppers, onions, carrots, and then we put into that cabbage, lots of herbs. They have great herbs, and arugula. So it's some greenery, crunchy thing with cooked vegetables, and then we have the. This is incredible. There is a whole separate crew that works in a different kitchen in a church somewhere that makes apple crisp for 700.
Oh, my.
So they use these, the little peelers, and all the apples are peeled. It's all local. They use the kernza and oats to make the crisp topping, and then it's served with whipped cream. So that's the whole meal. the community comes together every year and we make it up and serve it out on the prairie, and it is really, really fun for me.
Does the Land Institute have resident cows that you can get milk from?
They grow out on the prairie right next to where we're serving. They have some longhorns, which are just not a lot. And the buffalo. They also have buffalo. So buffalo.
One probably wouldn't want to milk the buffalo.
Not unless you had a male armor suit or something.
We'll get some.
They use baby buffaloes for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
So it's a really fun event for me. And that was my drive to Salina this weekend.
That sounds wonderful. You mentioned the idea of diversity and people that come to help. The Land Institute deals with what probably some people would consider weeds and kind of nasty invasive species, but you learn to work with that sort of thing. You learn that every plant has a purpose if you're part of the prairie. Talk about this wonderful gentleman you talked about. who's been helping you these past... A local chef in Salina.
My co-chef for the event is, when I first went to Salina, as I do lots of times, I've ended up over my culinary career doing a lot of sort of communal feeds, and you actually go into the community and you try to assess the best logistics that you can to, you know, get the job done, like what food is available, what stoves are available, what refrigeration is available, who the people are that can help you. So in Salina, I was introduced to a fellow called Bill Ficus. Now, Bill's even a little bit older than me. He's probably into his 70s at this point. He's another retired chef, and he's Greek. But he has lived in Salina a long time, but he's still very Greek. So Bill behaves like a Greek. And every year, somebody comes and says to me, oh, Bill did this and Bill did that. Like one year, someone prominent at the Land Institute comes and says, you know, I really don't think we should use Bill because a few months ago, he went into the bank and he was waving a gun around because he was really mad. Bill has a Greek temper. Okay, you know, he's such a character. He's a real, truly what we think of as an American immigrant. You know, he came here with nothing. He has done very well for himself and his family, and he's smart as a whip and irascible. So she told me Bill was in the bank and he was waving a gun around, and I don't know if that'll reflect well on the land. I said, well, did he shoot anybody? She said, no. I said, well, I think it's okay.
After all, Kansas is part of the old Wild West, and one tends to think of characters. So you found yourself a character.
I did, and he's a hard worker, and I think most people don't realize. They think we're just, you know, throw it all together and it happens. But, you know, you have a lot of temperature management, and there are a lot of HACCP or food safety hazard things that you have to be aware of. So it is quite a skill, and he's lifting and carrying hot pans and hauling it around, and he's got the guys and the pickup trucks, and not only that, he has all the pots and pans that no one else has in town. He has the stash for communal feeding. And so as soon as I met Bill and saw what he had, I knew he was the man to work with me. And we have developed a great rapport over the years. And a lot of mutual respect. You know, I don't have any problem with Bill, and the thing is, other people do because they you know, he's not a Kansan in that sense. He's still very Greek in the midst and Kansans are kind of like Iowans. You know, we tend to understate and we're very modest. And so Bill's always getting into trouble. And every year I go there, I have to kind of say to the community leadership and powers that be, you know, we can't do this event without Bill. And I remind them of this Wendell Berry story. He talks about... when you live in a small community, the town liar is the town liar. Now, everyone, you don't exclude him. You don't hate him. You don't even have to mistrust him because you simply know that whatever he's saying was probably an exaggeration, may not be true, and he's just part of the community and it's all taken into account. Now, so this is how I explain how to deal with Bill. Bill has quite a temper, and if he's upset... And it's usually actually justifiable. It's just a little out of proportion to the usual Kansas mentality. But he is a valuable member of the community. And so, you know, part of these events are community building. You know, all the ladies that show up year after year to help cut vegetables and to order them in advance and to, you know, bring it all together. And, I mean, you know, we probably have 25 people chopping and peeling and working away. And it's quite, you know, I'm always reminded of, you know, when they talk about it, it takes a village to raise a child. It's this village that we need to come to the table and eat together. And villages have always done this. There have always been community feasting ways. And it's a remarkable and very beautiful thing.
Great. We've been talking about the Prairie Festival at Salina, Kansas, and feeding 600, a communal meal for 600.
Seven or 800.
Yes. Oh, my goodness sakes. Yes. That's wonderful. And the idea of diversity. I'm picturing Kansas, fantastic blue skies, covered with monocrop sunflowers. But then here's this prairie.
Actually, they have a lot more undisturbed, never plowed prairie than we do in Iowa.
Oh, really?
Even.
That's good.
Yeah. There's the whole Flint Hills eastern part of the state that was actually never plowed simply because right underneath the topsoil, unlike in Iowa, it's very rocky, flinty soil. So the pioneers kind of passed over it and decided not to even bother plowing it.
Well, that was fortuitous.
It was. It's gorgeous. All they do is graze cattle where the buffalo once grazed.
Oh, very good. Let's talk about apple butter. And you brought some of the bread that you discussed.
Yes, we have bread and apple butter to eat this morning. You're going to hear us smacking our lips again. So I brought some of this lovely Kernza bread.
And this Kernza flour from Salina, Kansas, mm-hmm. is that, did you use 50%?
It's 50% uh-huh. Kernza. Mm-hmm. This is the food of the future, my dear, has arrived in the present. Rick, here's your piece. And this is apple butter. This is Ames apple butter. But I did mix it with yuzu, which...
Oh, tell me. This apple butter has a real citrusy sort of aftertaste.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it tastes like there's lemon or something in there. So what gives it that taste?
Well, yuzu, Y-U-Z-U.
Oh,
is a Japanese, Korean, Chinese, I think even, citrus that is used mostly for the flavor of the skin. It doesn't have a lot of juice. It has some juice. So although there's a little bit of it grown in California, it's become really popular in sushi restaurants. It has it kind of looks like lemon, but it has its own... Like the flavor difference between lemon and lime, well, there's another flavor difference yet with yuzu. So how we get yuzu in Ames is at the Korean grocery store, there's that one that's on...
Lincoln Way.
They have something, it's a Korean product, and they call it citron... Well, it's like orange marmalade, but it's made with yuzu, and it comes in a big jar.
And it does say citron something
on. I should have brought the jar.
I saw the jar at your house. It looked like a big jar of orange stuff.
Yeah, but it's actually yuzu, and what they use it for is they take a spoon of it and mix it in hot water and make a beverage out of it.
Oh.
But I use it for baking, and I mixed it in with this apple butter, and it's so good. Now, apple butter can go all kinds of different flavors, you know.
That's true. And this really livens it up. It's not just apple.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
A tang.
Yeah, I've made apple butter in the past, and I love making apple butter in a crock pot because why stand there and stir for hours when a crock pot can do it overnight?
No, you just put it on and go to sleep.
put your stuff. I usually always add, I have a recipe for, calls for vinegar in it, and I use a little balsamic vinegar. It deepens it, This has got ginger and cinnamon in it. Ginger,
well, it would
cinnamon,
also depend
and
probably on what kind of apples we're using, because there's so many apple flavors.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was an apple tree I just picked in town that was smallish and looked almost like crab apples, but had a lovely flavor. You know, more traditionally, people add cinnamon, stuff like that. I think last year I had so many apples, I made this version. Oh, I made another version where I put Calvados in it, which is French apple brandy. Really made it yummy. You could do the, you know, how you put basil in your apple jelly. Mm-hmm. You could put basils in your apple butter.
Oh, for that, yeah.
It's such a good base for making all kinds of unusual flavors. And then, because I like to do that, take a really traditional food that this looks like apple butter, you put it on your toast, and everybody will go, it tastes a little different. What'd you do there? You know, not quite. It's enough of the flavor that you would expect from apple butter, but it's got a little twist to it. Oof. A little something unexpected and surprising for the palate.
One nice thing about apple butter, it's a family tradition to do apple butter for Christmas presents.
Yes.
And I always think of apple butter as something to eat in the wintertime and have all these special tastes happening. So apple butter in the wintertime.
Well, I have to tell you, this is from last year's crop.
Yeah, that's
all I did was I put it in plastic freezer bags and threw it in the freezer. And then since I haven't really made apple butter this year, I didn't need to because I had so much from last year. It was such a bumper crop.
That's right.
Then I just hauled it out and put it in some jars.
We put things by when we can and enjoy them all of the time. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Dinah Lana Kitchen. Welcome Alice McGarry to our kitchen table. Alice McGarry is a farmer, musician, and a longtime good friend of mine. So welcome to the show, Alice.
Thanks, Lana.
Alice has a wonderful place called Mustard Seed Farm. Your farm is an inspiration to me. I've watched it grow from what I thought was a very simple beginning, but it has just blossomed. It is full of wonderful, good things. Tell me a little bit about your farm.
Yeah, so our farm, this is our seventh year, so we've been a farm for 7 years. And it's true, we started very small. We just rented 1 acre of land, and we didn't have a house. We just found somebody willing to rent us 1 acre of land, and there was a well and an old shed. And yeah, and then we grew food there, and then and we camped there. And eventually we rented a few more acres. Eventually we built a house. Just last year we bought 10 and a half acres out there. And we are 10 miles north and 5 miles west of Ames, out in not really near any town, kind of by where the town of Mackey used to be, where the Mackey schoolhouse is and the Mackey church. And yeah, we are kind of a weird farm, and we're all volunteer, and we are, our name is Mustard Seed Community Farm, and we are 100% volunteer, and we kind of have a crew of people that are on our team that make decisions together, and different people that do different jobs, and yeah, and we don't make any money, and no one gets paid, and we sell some of our food, and we give more food away than we sell. We try to give away 2/3 and sell about 1/3. Yeah, and we grow food.
This is a very interesting model. A farm that grows food. Your job is to feed people. That's it's a really the Mustard Seed Farm is located just across the county line on the northwest corner of Storey County. You can't really get lost finding it once you've found it. It's a really, really pretty place. It's the shed that she mentioned that was started out as their only building. Well, actually, there were a few, but
the only building we got to use. The
only building that you got to use was this really, it was a repurposed hog shed, and it has been used for a lot of different things. So, and now all your gardens kind of blossom out from that.
Mm-hmm.
Not only grow annuals and things to vegetables every year, but you got a lot of permanent plantings now too.
Yeah, we definitely do. We have, even though we were renting our land, we're like, we want to grow perennials, so we'll just plant them and see what happens. And yeah, so we're learning about them slowly. So we have grapes and berries and hazelnuts and apples and peaches and pears and basically anything that you can grow in Iowa that is food. We try it a little bit and we see how it goes, and then we might do more of it if it works well.
But they actually are little trees now with fruit on them. It's wonderful. It was a leap of faith that turned out into a really good thing. This is the fall. It's apple season. You're going to have an event this coming weekend.
Yes.
At your farm. So tell us about the event.
We are this Saturday, October 4th, in the afternoon after lunch. So 1 to 5 p.m. is our planned time for this. We are going to be hosting a cider pressing. Yeah, we have a bunch of apple trees that are very young, and we have probably 15 apples on our tree.
That's a good start.
If no one comes to our event, it'll be a really boring event. But basically what happened is Donna,
yes.
The other half of the Lana and Donna show, Donna gave us a cider press that she got at an auction, and it was an old cider press, and it's pretty cool. It's really huge and heavy, and it's all mechanical and has a big flywheel that you spin. And anyway, she gave this to us, and last year a number of people wanted to borrow it, and it was just like, well, this thing is too heavy to lend to people, and this thing is too complicated, and this is like, there's so much work to clean it. And so we thought, well, next year let's just invite all those people over, and they can all bring their apples at the same time. We can set this thing up once, and we can make a ton of cider, and anybody can take, you know, everybody can bring their apples and everybody can take cider home. Yeah, so that's what we're doing. This year there aren't as many apples as there were last year, so we're not sure how many people are coming or how many apples there will be.
It sounds a lot better to move the apples to the press than have the press come to the apples. So
yeah.
I think it's a wonderful time. So mention the date and time again.
It's this Saturday, October 4th, 1 to 5 at our farm, and our farm is 366 W Avenue. That's an Ames address. And however, if you follow your GPS, you will not find our farm. So go north 10 miles. We're just south of E18. Anyway.
Take County Line Road, which is on the west side of town. Right, that's County Line Road?
You can take a lot of roads north.
Okay, go north until you hit...
Until you hit E18, which is also 130th Avenue. And then probably you should go west until you're in Boone County and you're looking for W Avenue. And go south half a mile until you get to 366 W. You should bring apples if you're coming to this event. You don't have to, but somebody has to bring some apples to this event.
Then there will be a cider pressing at this place. It will be a lot of fun. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend, and the farm is worth seeing. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Do you have a website?
We do have a website, and it is mustardseedfarm.org.
That sounds good. Make use of that. Just go to see the cider press. It sounds like quite an invention, so that's good.
Hopefully, I haven't gotten it out yet, so hopefully it's going to be working well. But
yeah. As I recall, to make cider, did you make cider last year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you did.
Okay. Yeah.
So the process is you bring all the now pressing. One cannot just press apples with one's hands because they're kind of hard. That's why this big monster machine exists. So you dump the apples into something and mush them, right?
Right. So there's kind of a hopper, kind of like a wooden funnel, and like dump apples in. We actually cut them in half because it worked. They went better. And then it like goes to this really like grindy thing that you would not want to get your hands caught in. But we're just manually turning this, and then like all comes out, and underneath the grinder is like a big. Well, not, maybe like a little barrel, kind of like a little barrel with wooden slats. And then we scoot it further on the press and we turn another crank, and then it smushes all the apples and the juice comes out of the sides of the barrel. And then it flows again down a funnel, and for us just into big 5-gallon buckets.
Good. Oh, another thing, if you're bringing apples, it might be a good idea to bring some clean milk jugs or something.
Absolutely. Bring a container to take cider home with you, because we won't have containers for you.
Yes. The idea of turning piles of apples into mush, into juice, is a real fun thing to do. So let's talk some more about Mustard Seed Farm. Mustard Seed Farm, as you said, mainly exists to feed people, to help people. And you are part of an organization called the Catholic Worker Organization. Tell me about that.
I could talk to you like for a long time about the Catholic Worker Movement. If anybody's interested, feel free to call me or visit and we can talk about it. But so the Catholic Worker Movement is a movement, and it's not an organization. There's no boss. It's a movement that started in the 30s and based on a lot of different principles of social justice and this idea of taking the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church or of the Christian faith and putting them into action. And from that basis, it's kind of expanded and lots of different things are part of the Catholic Worker Movement. And principles like nonviolence and solidarity with the poor and the works of mercy, which are things like sharing food with the hungry or, you know, opening your house to people who are homeless.
This sounds like pretty radical stuff.
It's sort of basic
Christian stuff. It sounds like the basic what would Jesus do sort of thing. I've run across Catholic worker organizations before, and many of them are urban-based for a lot of social justice issues and feeding and housing and justice issues. But I'm thrilled to find that people are actually have had farms for a long time and use those farms as not just places to grow food, but also as places to grow community.
Right.
What a good thing. So that's a Catholic Worker Organization. Also, you put out, sporadically but proudly, you put out a little newsletter based on your farm. But then I when I read it, I realize that there are other people, other farmers around the country that also do this sort of thing. And so the newsletter is quite nice. How long have you been doing the newsletter?
Longer than the farm, maybe 8 years. And it just comes out twice a year. And it is a publication that it's partly our farm, but it's called the Catholic Worker Farmer, and we print articles from other Catholic Worker farms and other urban houses that are doing agricultural things.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm. Good. It's always talking about food and farming and seasons and good stuff in there. So next time you see Alice, talk to her about that. It's a nice thing. something else that comes out of your farm. You have your own CSA, your Community Supported Agriculture.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know what a CSA is.
Well, we've talked about CSA before. It means people pay ahead. They pay a farmer to grow them stuff, and then the farmer gives them stuff. Is that it?
That's it. Yeah, and so like I said, we sell about a third of what we grow, and that's how we sell it. We sell it through a CSA. Yeah, and our CSA is a lot like the other CSAs in the area. I would say the one thing is that it's a little less expensive, and we have a sliding scale, which is, I mean, some of the other CSAs also have a sliding scale. A big, big deal for us is that everyone has a right to really good food. I guess that's like a fundamental of our farm, is that like everybody should be able to eat really good food. And so we spend a lot of our time growing food for people to eat. But yeah, basically, you can join our CSA. Our CSA goes all the way down to zero, I guess, our sliding scale. And we want to make food available to anyone who needs it. So that is the way people, you know, if people have money, they pay to be in our CSA. If they have not so much money or anyway, we'll give them any price they want. We also have a working share, and we have about 14 people who work for their food. I don't know.
That seems to work out pretty well.
It works just as well as running an all volunteer farm can.
Well, actually, running any farm is a challenge, and this has got to be a challenge too. But it works. You end up feeding people. That's really good. So your volunteers are connected with your CSA. You also mentioned that you had interns, which is a little slightly different thing. Tell me about this intern program thing going on here.
Yeah, I mean, we every year we've had interns or people that come for the season to be on our farm team who generally want to learn something about farming. Or this year we had a very unusual crew. We had more interns than usual, and they were all young women. So that was really fun this year. But yeah, it's usually one or two people every summer. This year we had four young women living with us and two young women who lived in town who were coming out. They're people that are coming more often than our other, like, mm-hmm. than our work shares or mm-hmm. other volunteers. Mm-hmm. And they're part of what they want is to learn.
So they know nothing about farming? They don't know anything about gardening? You're a brave woman.
I mean, it just varies so much. Yes. Sometimes they know nothing. They always know something about something.
but not especially about growing food.
This year was very interesting because all six of them knew different things about different things and were passionate about different things. And it was a challenge to figure out how to teach them because they were all over the place. But they were wonderful, enthusiastic and smart.
So you got vegetables in and out of the ground. You got interns that are a little wiser at the end of the year. I think this idea of growing community is a really good idea. That sounds good. Also, you have events at your farm. I don't make it to all the events at your farm, but lots of stuff happens out there. You have workshops occasionally. Tell me about some of the things that you've explored, taught. What goes on at a workshop at Mustard Seed Farm?
Right. So like I said, a big deal for us is that everybody should be able to eat really good food. And partly that's we grow food for them, but also and, you know, like, we are good at growing food, and we love growing food, so that's, like, something we can do. But we also just want – one, we believe everybody should have good food, and two, we believe, like, we should be able to grow food on this planet in a way that treats the planet really well, and we should be able to live on this planet in a way that treats the planet really well. And so we also try to do a lot of education about sustainable living and about food production and health and nutrition. This year we had a workshop on seed saving and a workshop on permaculture design and natural building. And, we do smaller lessons about, soil and...
You mentioned canning.
Canning.
And candle making. All that stuff that... the idea of being mindful about growing food, but also in your daily life, being mindful and learning how things work and learning how to do for yourself, there's a joy in that sort of thing. It really is. And another thing that you do, and it's a wonderful community outreach thing, is invite people to your Friday night potlucks.
Yeah, we do. And I was going to say that that's a long tradition in the Catholic worker movement, this idea of having roundtable discussions for the clarification of thought, this idea that we know a lot and we're smart and we like to talk to each other and we like to think about things we like, you know, and that if we understood things a little bit better, we might change our actions. And so we just host a lot of events for people to just get together and think about something that they care about. And usually we have somebody who might be a little bit more of an expert to kind of get us started. But yeah, we do this every Friday during the summer and once a month on Fridays in the winter.
It's good. The last one I went to, everyone brought a dish. We all had good food. And we sat around in your outdoor kitchen, it's a really nice thing, an outdoor kitchen, which is right in the middle of your garden. And we had a wonderful, what was the discussion on? I forgot.
It was about GMOs.
Oh, it was,
and
too.
Organic agriculture and, yeah, how you know, can we get along? You know, lots of good questions. It was a great group, too. We had some, you know, plant breeders there who were talking about good things and bad things about GMOs. And we had farmers and eaters and people with lots of opinions. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, something about not only sharing food, but sharing ideas at the same time. We can do that. We are human beings that can do lots of more than one thing at once. So these Friday night potlucks are a wonderful use of food and people. You also do something that I really enjoy, and I'm awfully glad you do it. You're a really good fiddler, Alice.
Thanks, Lana.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into fiddling and what kind of fiddling you do and making music.
I think music is amazing. I think music is wonderful. And I like playing old music. I guess I like the connection to tradition and the connection to memory and kind of drawing. In the United States, we just have amazing richness of musical heritage from different cultures meeting each other and learning from each other. Yeah, and just like a lot of things we do at the farm, it's about coming together and sharing and being grateful. And I don't know if you've ever been to a dance. You could come to a dance sometime where we're playing and Lana's calling. And
that happens every now and then.
It happens fairly often. It's really fun. Lana's a really good caller, and she's fun to play for.
And you're a great band. The band that Alice is in is called the Porch Stomper Band. You may have seen them at farmers markets. They here in Ames in farmers markets every now and then, and they show up quite often at the Des Moines Farmers Market. And you'll find them on street corners here and there doing things.
In case you're wondering what that our name is, it's the Porch Stompers, like the front porch, not like the Borscht Stompers, like we are like a beet and cabbage soup stompers, and we're not like Porsche Stompers, like fancy cars, or pork stompers. There are many things that people sometimes think that we are. We are the Porch Stompers.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You need to see this spelled. It's Porch Stompers. So that's good. The music really ties a community together very well, very well. I think I'll ask you one more thing here. It's important.
Uh-oh.
What's your favorite thing that you grew this year? Or what was the success? What was fun?
Right. I have to say our interns. It gives me a lot of joy to watch people learn and kind of come into a place of confidence or a place of leadership. It was really neat to not only watch these six women learn and kind of be more confident, but also to watch them work together and be this team. And they were so caring, and they were super challenging in lots of ways, but it was really rewarding this year to work with all of them.
Good. So it sounds like there's lots of things growing on Mustard Seed Farm. Thank you for talking to us today, Alice. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Lana, and thanks, Donna, for the cider press.
Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was music by the Porch Stomper Band. You just listened to a tune called Sadie's Kitchen, and earlier another tune by the Porch Stomper Band, a fine fiddle tune called You've Gotta Stop Kicking My Dog Around. I do like that one.
With our fine fiddler Alice McGarry.
Yes. And the Porch Stomper Band is fiddler Alice McGarry with Merle Hall, Nate Kepperman, and Rick Exner. They're a local treasure. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio, 89.1 Heart of Iowa Radio. Support this station. Listen, donate, enjoy. Tell your friends if you enjoy this kind of show and all the stuff that surrounds it. Tell your friends. Listen often. If you don't enjoy it, come on in and make your own show. This is community radio, folks. This
She's
is community
not
radio.
You can do that.
We can. You can, too. Donna, there's some stuff coming up.
Yeah, we often talk about, oh, this happened and that happened, and, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, we had a good time. Sorry if you missed out. So we are going to talk about the coming up things tonight, a very wonderful opportunity that we have in Ames because we have a large university here with resources that brings interesting programs to town. We have Deborah Coons Garcia, wife of beloved Dad, the Grateful Dead, Jerry Garcia, wife of Jerry Garcia, who is a filmmaker. And she has made a film, a very beautiful film called Symphony of the Soil. And she's coming to lecture tonight with a woman named Kate Scow, who is a professor of soil science at UC Davis. And what they're talking about is, quote, communicating science through stories in film, a dialogue about agricultural sustainability and the soil. This is at 8 o'clock in the Great Hall. Last night, I believe the movie was screened. It's a wonderful opportunity to talk about what Fred Kirschman and Mary Swander call ag arts. It's exploring agricultural issues through artistic medium, which really helps other people who are not scientists, who are not farmers, understand where our food comes from, and in this particular instance, the importance of soil and the beauty of soil systems and microbiology going on and what's growing under the ground. We often only see what's growing on above the ground. So tonight will be a really interesting lecture, 8 o'clock at the Great Hall. That's upcoming. Was there something else upcoming we wanted to talk about?
Oh, I just want to mention a heads up for all of you who are farmers market fans.
And we still have another month left.
Yes. If you haven't visited a farmers market near you this summer, well, shame on you. Get yourselves out on a Saturday morning and go to one. Meet your local farmer. A note about the Ames Main Street farmers market that happens Saturday morning. We're starting an hour later, so the time is, instead of starting at 8 o'clock, we're starting at 9 o'clock, so it's 9 to 12:30, and the 9 o'clock time will go through October, and that farmer's market goes through October 25th. Lots of things yet.
Hurry on out. We still got a lot coming in. We got all the squashes. We still got onions and garlic. Some places have not had a frost so far, right. So we do have a lot of things left for
there's
this time of
There's lots of apples, baked goods.
Uh-huh.
There's a place called Cloverdale Farms has greens yet and lots of fall veggies. Lots of fall veggies, and you can probably even get some words of wisdom from Bruce Smith if you buy some vegetables from him. He's always got something to say. Get yourself a cup of coffee. And there's a woman that is selling something called crullers at market. It's kind of like a really nice pick-me-up donut in the morning. Crullers, ask for one. She also sells aprons, so look for the apron stand and get yourself a cruller.
I'm going to have one. I think it must be what we used to call curlers when we were growing up. Crullers is, what do you think, the German word for it or something?
Well, sure.
It's a donut,
and it's
good. It's a yeasty, light, fluffy, very sweet donut.
And there's lots of other food vendors there at the downtown market, too.
Oh,
and usually
yeah.
always music, and it's good.
We have one more news item that we wanted to talk about. Our very own Dr. Fred Kirschenmann received the One World Award for Lifetime Achievement. He had traveled to Germany. It was presented by an organization called IFOAM, which is the International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements, and it is a big, a large, mostly centered in Europe, but it does have activities that incorporate all the organic farming initiatives, the legal things, the planning, the politics of it. It's a very prestigious and well-known organization, and they honored Fred for, quote, "For decades, he has been a leading farmer on the ground, a tireless advocate for farmers, and a longtime voice in organic and sustainable agriculture in policy and academic forums." This is Fred, who is the distinguished fellow at the Leopold Center. We had him on the show a few weeks ago. Congratulations, Fred. This is certainly a well-deserved reward.
And there was a lovely picture in the Ames paper. He's kind of backlit by this circle. He looks very angelic. Good picture, Fred. Good picture. Yes. Enjoy apple butter. Check out an apple cider pressing this week. And thanks for listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. I'm Lana Nachtigal.
Donna Prisgintos.
And today we had special guest Alice McGarry from Mustard Seed Farm.
And hope to see you at the discussion tonight about Symphony of the Soil, 8 o'clock at the Great Hall at ISU. Should be very interesting.
We had Apple Butter by Donna Prisgintos, with Engineering by Rick Morrison. Contact us with your thoughts and comments, khoiradio@gmail.com. Visit the website, khoifm.org. Listen to us Tuesday at noon, or go to the website and hear us any old time. That's very good. We'll go out with some more Porch Stomper music. This is 5 miles out of town by the Porch Stompers. Eat good food, enjoy life.